first thing I want to say to the Yulu Marxist Society is that Marx was absolutely right about the nature of the capitalist system. The capitalist system is a system, he said, that will always go through boom and slump as long as it exists. The Communist Manifesto said 160 years ago, it is enough to mention the commercial crises that by their periodical return put the existence of the entire bourgeois society on its trial, each time more threateningly. In these crises, there breaks out an epidemic that in all earlier epochs would have seemed an absurdity. The epidemic of overproduction. That is exactly what we are seeing going before our eyes at the very moment. Have you seen this? The Metro Light and the London paper have both got pretty well identical headlines saying, we're doomed. Well, there is an alternative to being doomed, which I will suggest at the end of the meeting. The papers often talk about the present financial crisis, and I'm mainly going to talk about the present financial crisis, as something to do with high finance. But it's not just to do with high finance. This is a fundamental crisis of capitalism, as was outlined by Marx in the Communist Manifesto in 1848, and has recurred periodically. Every capitalist crisis has its own unique features, but they also have features common to the nature of the capitalist system. The first thing about the capitalist system is it is a system where production is for profit, not for social need. There's always the possibility that if anyone thinks they can make a buck out of something, then they will go for it without understanding what is actually required at any point in time. The second thing about the capitalist system is it is an unplanned system. Now, if you were to extend that analogy to the animal world, capitalism would be a creature without a brain or a central nervous system. Now, there's lots of creatures that have existed without brains and without central nervous systems. I understand quite large creatures. I'm told the Diplodocus was such a creature. But the Diplodocus is extinct. And I would suggest to you that the reason that it didn't have a brain might have quite a lot to do with why it is now extinct. Because the poor old vegetarian Diplodocus might be getting bitten on its bum by a Tyrannosaurus, and it would have some sort of nerves. There would be something saying to the poor creature, this is not very nice. But unfortunately, because it didn't have a brain, it couldn't actually work out a strategy and to get away from the Tyrannosaurus. And that's actually how the capitalist system works. Nobody knows how much we need. Nobody is responsible. Nobody plans what's going on. Of course, something regulates how production operates. It's money. People operate by price signals, so money is very important. And although capitalism doesn't have a brain and a central nervous system, it does have various nodes of nerves that warn it as to whether it has a problem, whether it's doing well, or whether it's doing badly. And those nodes of nerves are represented by the banks, because it is the banks that deal with money, and it's money which operates as the signal to individual economic agents, as they're called, in other words, to people all over the world, as to whether it's a good idea to produce wheat this year or whether it's a better idea to produce barley. The only way they do that, nobody says to them, well, this is how much we need. What happens is if there's a shortage, then the price goes up, and that tells you there's a shortage. It's a bit late, isn't it? Because the shortage has already occurred. And in the case of crops, it's going to take about a year to switch. But that's how it works, through the price mechanism, through the money mechanism. And that's what makes banks so important and the financial system so important in the capitalist system. Now, what we have seen over the recent past is a huge bubble. And a bubble is an unplanned development which is characteristic of capitalism and usually leads to a collapse. Bubbles burst. That's what they do. We have seen a house price bubble. And I would define as a bubble as a situation where prices go up because people are buying, and people are buying because prices are going up. And that is only possible in an unplanned system where everyone is looking out for themselves and thinking, if other people are doing it, must be a good idea. So you get these bubbles, and these bubbles always burst. People said the housing, the ever-increasing price of houses was fair enough because it was bricks and mortar. Well, of course, it's handy to have a roof to keep the rain off your head. It is useful, but people weren't using houses as just means of keeping the rain off their head. They were using them, in effect, as automatic telling mechanisms because the price would go up so they could borrow more, and then the price of houses would go up even further because people were borrowing, and quite often they were buying houses. And bubbles burst. We had a bubble in tulips in the 1630s in Holland. Everyone thinks that's completely stupid. I don't think it's stupid. What's the matter with tulips? They're quite nice. All different colours, people collected them, but then you got to the situation where tulips, some tulip bulbs were worth more than the price of a farm, and the bottom fell out of that market. Before 1929 there was a Florida real estate bubble where people were going out and buying what turned out to be pieces of swamp in Florida to build a holiday home there. They never went down there, so they didn't notice until it was too late that they got some swamp. But Florida land prices have still not recovered from the level that they achieved in the late 1920s before the 1929 crash. And now we've seen this house price bubble. And one of the things I've noticed that stockbrokers' newsletters do is they've actually appropriated expression, the roadrunner moment. You know, the roadrunner runs over the cliff, and as long as he's running, he thinks he's okay. And then he looks down, and that's the bad thing about him. It was always unstable, but it's only when he realises he's on his way down that he actually falls. Well, we've seen over the past year the roadrunner moment for the house price bubble. And it's not just going to mean that house prices go down, it's going to mean a lot of hardship for a lot of ordinary people who bear no responsibility whatsoever for the crash. So the bubble was going to burst anyway. But let's just go through what happened. We had what was called a subprime mortgage scandal. This meant that various borderline criminal financiers offered mortgages to people often with no jobs, no income, no assets. People who could not possibly afford to pay them. These people were disproportionately actually black and Latino people. And it was, in effect, it was a vast fraud that was being perpetrated on them. Now, you might think, well, that's bad news for people who live in Florida, Pennsylvania and California, which is where most of these frauds were carried out. But no, they tell us about capitalist globalization, how wonderful it is, how it spreads the benefits all over the world. The other side of globalization is it spreads the risks all over the world as well. And that's what we saw happening because I don't want to bore you with the complexities, but people who are regarded as geniuses, people who quite often had Nobel Prizes in mathematics, were devising ever more complicated financial instruments, pieces of paper. And a bit like a sushi bar, they would take some of these subprime mortgages, some perfectly good mortgages, put them together and sell it all around the world. And in so doing, they spread the toxins all round the world financial system. So it wasn't a localised problem in Pennsylvania and Florida and California anymore. It was a crisis for the world capitalist system. And we have seen now that these things have all gone horribly sour. But they were actually used as assets, because as long as someone's paying for their mortgage, if you buy a bit of paper which says you're entitled to their mortgage payments anymore, then that's a financial asset. This may be a bit strange to you. You may not be familiar that there are actually hundreds of thousands and millions of people who go around and make their living, not by working like most people, but by buying bits of paper, which entitle them to unearned income. But they're out there, they exist. And these people were buying these bits of paper. And they thought, very often they ended up in the vaults of banks, and people just lent more and more on the basis that this was an asset. Oh, we've just bought this asset, so therefore we can lend more money, which was wonderful, until they found out that really they weren't assets at all, because the people in Pennsylvania, California or Florida had been evicted, and therefore they were no longer paying their mortgage. And so that spread this problem all around the world. And we got to the this tendency to create paper assets, billions of which have now disappeared. People have said, well, that's not really an asset anymore, because nobody's paying the mortgage, which is where you were supposed to get the money from. So what's happened to that is what they call leverage, which I'm afraid they also mispronounced to add to the crimes of finance capital, but they call it leverage. And some banks have been lending 30, even more times as much as the assets they've got. And of course, they've now found the assets are not worth anything. So what you've got is you've got, a Florida money manager, Michael Lewis, says, well, if you're leveraged at 6-1, that's a bit like having a six-shot revolver with one bullet in it, and you may say that's an acceptable level of risk. Personally, I don't think that's an acceptable level of risk. But if you're leveraged 30 times over, in effect, you put 5 bullets in the chamber of the revolver out of 6, and as you can see, your chances of blowing your brains out are rather high as a result. And that's leverage for you. It works to increase credit, but it also works to increase debt and misery when it comes on. Now, so the next stage was that the banks that bought this stuff didn't want to lend to each other because they didn't trust these bits of paper anymore, and this was called the credit crunch. And so we saw what used to be a sleepy building society in Newcastle called Northern Rock, which didn't own a single subprime mortgage in Pennsylvania, Florida, or any of these other places, as far as I know, suddenly, but did borrow its money from the financial markets. And suddenly the financial markets were saying, we're not having it. And Northern Rock experienced the first run on a bank in 140 years in this country, where people actually queued up almost exactly a year ago, September 2007. I think there was a Marylebone branch of the Northern Rock or something like that. People queued up all night to get their money out. And the incompetence of New Labour in this was seen by they didn't act until it was far too late, and they were accused by the CBI of treated Britain like a banana republic. This should not happen in a stable, mature capitalist country. And of course, that's right. Now, so far, I've been telling you about the problems of high finance. But these are not just problems of high finance. These are the problems that are coming home to absolutely everyone who lives in a capitalist society all over the world. And the transmission mechanism that causes these problems in high finance to be transmitted to the real economy is the mechanism of house prices. It was house prices that were going up through the roof that caused euphoria of the boom, that caused all this completely fictitious house of cards of capital to be created, and this orgy of lending, completely unsound investment. And it was the fall in house prices that we're seeing now that is going to bring misery to a lot of people. You might think that house prices were too high And they were due for a fall anyway. But that houses are not more affordable in this country since the price of houses has fallen. They're less affordable. And the reason is because Northern Rock used to lend you 125% mortgages. You know, in other words, run out and buy a house, and you might as well have a car as well while you're about it. Now they're talking about 80% mortgages. You pay 20% up front. If I'm not mistaken, that means if a couple wants to buy a house in London, they're talking about putting down round about £40,000 or £50,000, which is 2 years' wages. So what's the effect of that? Well, the effect is that not so many people are buying houses. That's what the effect is. That the actual, not only is the price of house fallen, so this wondrous magic wand effect that you could create money just by sitting at home, and some people reckon they made more money by sitting at home on the increase of their house price than they did by going out to work. But on top of that, that's all gone by the window, and people are finding it more and more difficult to buy a house, so the actual level of house sales is going down.